Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Hey, and welcome back. I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and host of the Stacking Benjamins podcast, one of the four contributors to this here podcast. You know, we've got a great show for you today, live from Podcast Movement, a great conference that happened in Anaheim, California. Miranda Marquit and I went to Anaheim, and we're going to kick Doug. We're going to kick Doug and Linda to the curb this week while we take over the show. But before we go out to Anaheim, have you ever wondered if there was a way to capitalize on all that online chatter of the millions of investors out on social media? Well, guess what? Your wait's over, because that same artificial intelligence technique that many of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use, well, that technique is now at your fingertips, and you can make their edge your edge. The Buzz Index, which is licensed to an exchange-traded fund that trades under ticker symbol BUZ, provides investors with a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. Zero surveys, zero guessing. Here's how it works. First, the Buzz targets the most mentioned large-cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. The more active the conversation, the greater the reliability of the Buzz. And each of the most mentioned stocks, well, they're given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks that have the most bullish scores, those get included in the index. Each month, the Buzz is tracked to capture the latest big data-driven insights. And then the 75 companies with the most bullish scores, those are selected. And that positions Buzz to capture the highest return potential. Invest in the wisdom of crowds. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. Now let's head out to Anaheim and Miranda Marquit and I.
Hi, welcome to this special episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Woo-hoo! So we are at Podcast Movement, and we are at the FinCon table at Podcast Movement. PT has been kind enough to give us space to come out here and podcast live. And it's very exciting. And it's even more exciting because we've kicked Doug and Linda off the show.
Bam. We've taken over, Miranda.
If they won't show up, we'll replace them.
They're gone. We got much better people.
That's right. And who we have with us today, we have Nick Loper from Side Hustle Nation. Thanks for being with us today, Nick.
Thank you for having me.
And we also have Eric Rosenberg from Personal Profitability Podcast, from the Personal Profitability Podcast. Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So this is very exciting because we are going to talk about side hustles today and when it makes sense to invest in your side hustle, what you can do to make a little more money on the side, and what happens when your side hustle starts to take over and you can do more with your side hustle than you can with your real job. So without further ado, let's jump in. Let's start with you, Nick. When does it make sense to put more of your time into your side hustle than your main job? When does it make sense to kind of invest that time outside of your main job?
Well, a lot of people look at it, they look at it this way. They look at it in the traditional sense that entrepreneurship is risky and having a career is the safe path. But I think what we learned in the last recession is that having a, you know, relying on one source of income, whether that's your day job or whether that's a business, is inherently risky because you never know what is going to happen to that source of income. And at least when you're running your own business, you have a little more control over that source and you can diversify and you can do other things. But to be relying on your employer for your livelihood and your family's future, that's a scary proposition, for me at least. And, you know, a lot of people, well, I've got skills, I can always find another job if I lose this one. But in your back pocket, I think it makes sense to start building some outside income streams, whether that's through investing or whether that's through trying to build up your own business. That, to me, is a prudent financial move.
But yeah. Do you find, though, Nick, do you find that sometimes people give up on the main job too early? In other words, we've seen all these statistics where people don't ask for a raise when they should, right? And they could increase their income that way. And they start up a side hustle so they don't pay attention at work anymore and it makes them worse at their job. Like, when should they really buckle down and focus more on that main job first?
Well, I like the strategy of asking for a raise, for sure. In fact, I have a guide on the five fastest ways to make more money, and that's number one. Like, hey, you can get paid more for what you're already doing. That's fantastic. The other thing to consider there would be, what's your risk in your day job?
So, yeah, I really like that. And that's one of the things that the idea of income diversity makes a lot of sense, I think, because you want to make sure that, you know, you have other sources of income if something goes wrong. And, Eric, you recently dealt with this issue. You recently quit your real job and moved into side hustling. But what made you decide to focus on the side hustle instead of trying to make more money at your recent job?
So in my day job, I was a senior financial analyst at a Fortune 500 company. So it wasn't like I was poorly paid. I know some people who've taken the jump from the nonprofit sector or something like that, and it's a lot easier to walk away from a little money than a lot of money. But I, on the side, my income kept growing steadily, and I always enjoyed my hustles on nights and weekends. And in 2015, I made just over $40,000 on the side on top of my full-time day job. And because I'm a nerdy numbers guy, I did some Googling, figured out, oh, or how do I compare to the average population in Portland? And I was right about at the average income with what I was making on the side. And I thought, well, if I can make the average income in 10 to 20 hours a week as a side hustle, if I put a full-time effort in, you know, 40, 50 hours a week, I'd still be working fewer hours than I was before. And if I can even double it, I'd be thrilled. And it turned out I was able to triple that side hustle income number when I left my job.
You also must have looked internally, too, though, at your own cash flow.
Oh, yeah. So I had lots of savings. I think that's an important step before you leave a job. If I didn't earn a dollar on the side, I could have gone for well over a year without earning a cent. So that's, I know, not a normal landing pad to have, but I felt good with it. So that made me feel personally more comfortable. But also, I knew I wasn't going to make zero. I was already making, you know, the run rate of $40,000 a year. So odds were it was going to work out. But I was, you know, very cautious and thoughtful before I pulled the trigger.
So how do you find a side hustle that's worth putting time into? Right? Because time is a finite resource. And you, Eric, were talking about, well, hey, you know, I'd be able to work less and make more. I mean, that's the dream, right? Work less, make more. That's everybody's dream. And so how do you decide what side hustle is worth putting the time into? And when do you decide to, like, cut bait if you realize that the side hustle is, like, just sucks?
Well, you have to start. That's thing number one. If you don't start, you won't know. If I hadn't started my blog, when I started it in 2006, I didn't know that I was writing my resume for a new career path that would allow me to do what you just said, work less and make more. So in the beginning, I didn't know exactly the route that was going to lead me here, because here isn't what my goal was. My goal was, you know, working on my own blog. But along the way, I had to recognize, you know, here's where I'm seeing the most success. And where I was seeing the most success wasn't necessarily the first choice of where I wanted to see the most success, but I was seeing success somewhere. So by, you know, meticulously tracking my numbers, I was an accountant for a while, I had very detailed financials, and I could see, you know, 80% of my revenue was coming from writing. So obviously that's a place to focus, where, you know, 10% was coming from my own blog. So, you know, I love my blog, I wouldn't want to stop it, but clearly I needed to focus on the freelance writing because that's where the money was coming in the door.
I saw an article recently on Business Insider, Nick, that showed 9 popular things that people do as a side hustle and showed the ROI. Airbnb was number one. Doing that. TaskRabbit was number 2. Lyft was 3. Uber was 4. Do I start, to Eric's point, do I start there? Do I start, okay, Airbnb gives me the biggest ROI, so clean out the broom closet and call it a spare bedroom?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good point. And so what I see is, like, if you're looking for a side hustle to get started, and that's kind of the biggest or one of the biggest hangups is, like, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to work on. So probably the 4 main areas, or the 4, you know, entry, the gateway drugs into entrepreneurship I see is that sharing economy.
Yeah.
Would be number 1, the Airbnbs, the Ubers of the world, right? Because it's push button easy, and they have a marketplace of built-in demand. So I think that's a natural place for people to get started, especially if you do have those underused assets in your life, the spare bedroom, the mother-in-law unit, the car that sits around in your driveway, or whatever it is. The second tier, or the second kind of area of side hustles that I see, is the freelancing route, right? It's like, hey, I have this skill. I'm doing this for my day job. Maybe I'm not, but there are other people who could probably use this skill. I can go out and sell that on the open market. And the beef against that is, well, I'm already trading time for money at my day job. Why am I going to do that on the side? Like, I'm going to try and build something a little bit more scalable. So numbers 3 and 4 are in the like realm of e-commerce. Like, I'm going to make my own product, like these, you know, swag sunglasses or something that are on the table here, and kind of put that on Amazon or build my own store, or going the route of saying I have an expertise in a certain area. I'm going to build a blog. I'm going to build a podcast. I'm going to, you know, establish my authority in this space, and whether that leads to consulting or whether that leads to courses and books, and it's like a more time leveraged business down the road.
Tier 3 and tier 4 sound like they're tier 3 and tier 4 because they're going to require some investment. You're going to have to put some money into those tiers.
Yeah, for the e-commerce business, absolutely. Yeah. You can start as cheap as you want. I met a guy who calls himself the flea market flipper. He lives down in Orlando, and every weekend you find me at the Orlando flea market, and he says, I won't, you know, buy anything for more than $100. My wife is starting this. She's like specializing in baby items. She's like, I won't buy anything for more than $3. So like, that's her startup cost, and she'll turn around and try and flip it for a profit. But if you're going to, you know, having something manufactured and you're going to import it from China, you're looking at probably, you know, $1,000 at the very low end, maybe $5,000 would be more realistic for like, okay, I feel really confident in this product.
In those side hustles, I would think you got to spend a lot of time evaluating the downside, like what could go wrong when I invest this money.
Yeah, and that's something to think about when you're making any investment, is like, what's the worst case scenario? Is this something that I can afford to lose? Now, normally with physical products, you can at least liquidate it and you can probably break even on it. You're like, okay, the math in my head said, okay, I was going to have a, you know, a 50% margin on this. That didn't pan out due to competition or whatever. So worst case, you know, have that worst case scenario in the back of your mind. And a lot of times in the entrepreneurship realm, we overinflate the downside, overinflate the word, I'm going to be a failure and I'm never going to be able to get back on that horse. It's like, hey, you know, it's probably not going to be life threatening.
So we've looked at that a little bit. How do you decide that it's worth it to invest that $1,000 in your business? Or how do you go through that process of deciding that that's worth it? Because you're not only investing the $1,000, now you're investing your time as well, right? It's time you're never going to get back. You can get the $1,000 back.
Yeah,
you can't get that time back.
There's some kind of like ROI calculation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So how do you figure that out?
I look at investing, whether it's time or money, as kind of like a percentage of net worth. And on the time side, you could look at it as like as a percentage of your day, percentage of your week. And talked about this with Brandon from Mad Scientist, where it's like, okay, maybe I set aside 5% of my net worth to invest in this business, invest in this side project, with the reasoning being, well, I could probably survive on 95% of the calories I'm currently consuming. I could probably, you know, survive on 95% of the electricity I'm currently using. Like, it's going to suck. Like, it always sucks to fail, but it's not going to be a life-changing endeavor. And same thing on the time front. If this is something that I care about, it's like I can prioritize half an hour a day or a couple hours a week to try and get it off the ground.
That sounds like, Eric, what you went through.
Yeah, it's you know, I tried lots of different things along the way, and it was, you know, piecing together the puzzle of what worked right for me. So in the beginning, like, I was actually very hesitant to put any money into my online businesses, and this is something I tell people today, like, don't do what I did in the beginning. I didn't even want to spend $7 to buy a domain name until my blog had made $7 to pay for it.
Oh my gosh.
And I was thinking, like, now I look back, and like, how ridiculous was it that I was willing to spend all of these hours and I wouldn't put in, you know, $50 or $60 a year for a domain name and hosting. And eventually I did that, and now, you know, I spent a heck of a lot more than that on domain names and hosting. But in the beginning, you know, I had to be willing to invest something and put a little bit of my money where my mouth is or where my fingers were on the keyboard to get started. And yeah, so yeah, that was a little bit of a risk. It took money. I could have gone to the bar with my friends and got a round of drinks for $60. But, you know, for me, that $60 was something that opened up all of these new doors, which, you know, eventually led to that freelancing thing.
Yeah, and I liked one of the things you said earlier when you were talking about tweaking, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier too, Eric, was you were talking about your web development kind of end of the business versus the writing end of the business, and how you realized that you were making more money from the writing and it was taking less time. And so by evaluating that, you could see where to move your your limited resources.
Yeah, so what happened there when I left my job, you know, I wanted to do anything I could to make a dollar because the steady paychecks were gone and my insurance was more expensive. And, you know, like any responsible dad with a new 6-month-old daughter, when I quit my job, I sold my house and moved to a more expensive city.
Perfect.
So I came down to Southern California.
That's some strategery there.
Yeah. So you know, I was making brilliant life decisions. But again, I had years of calculation and hard work behind it. But when I left that job, I was like, I just need to make the buck. So I know how to build websites. I'm decently good at it. People are willing to pay me for it. That's obviously something I should be doing. And I was doing that in parallel with the writing. And there's a rule called the 80-20 rule, or the Pareto principle. And I was looking at my QuickBooks, and I saw 76% of my revenue, which almost exactly 80%, in finance we round, so let's call it 80%, was coming from writing, and that was 20% of my time. And about 80% of my time and 90% of my stress was around the web development side of the business, and that was bringing in 20% of my revenue. So it was like night and day. This is the 80-20 rule. So I cut the web business, and it was over those next 2 months that my income grew so fast.
But even both of those, Nick, the two things that Eric's talking about, it's interesting to me when you were going through your different tiers. Like those top two tiers are kind of what I think of as short-term money. Like if I need cash right now, I probably do the sharing economy, right?
Right.
Because no investment, nothing else. But the stuff Eric's talking about, like he's building a whole career on the side and getting that rolling as he goes.
Yeah, it's longer term for sure. Yeah. And when you're working the day job, you have the flexibility to do that because you're not relying on, you know, ringing the cash register right away. You're kind of approaching it from a position of growth and opportunity rather than a position of desperation.
How important is a full business plan then?
I've never done one.
Never.
I learned how to write business plans in business schools, and I've written very extensive ones, and they were all case studies, and I've never done one in real life for my own business. Unless you're going to get a bank loan, you really don't need one.
But
and you need a plan.
Don't you think that, like, and I'm not talking about the 100-page, you know, bank business plan. I'm talking about a 4-page, what the hell am I doing it and why?
Well, I have some. I use the stickies on my Mac, and that's where I put my to-do list. That's my goals. You know, my plan is, you know, so it's interesting being in the position I'm in now. We were saying it is a time for money thing, but I've bought a lot of free time by switching to this job. So now I have the flexibility to use that new free time I got to go back to the blog or to go back to the podcast or one of my other projects. So I'm able to. My goals can be liquid. They can move regularly. So as long as I have that long-term goal, which I have a goal to make over $10,000 a month online every month this year. That was my goal I set. You know, I set it publicly on my blog, and I missed it 1 month by $200. So I'm not there, but on average, I'm still ahead.
Round it.
I know. Yeah, round it up. I'm in finance. I used to round to the nearest $10 million. So what's $200?
How important is that goal-setting process, though, Nick?
Well, I'll flip it around. Did you have a business plan for your podcast?
Yeah. Actually, we really did.
Okay. Did you have the 100-page right now one?
You, like for stacking Benjamins, like you and the other guy, you guys actually sat down and did a plan.
We did. Well, we looked at the we did. We did two different pieces. Number one, we did a market analysis of where we fit in and where we were going to be different.
Okay.
So we started with that. Number two was we then had a marketing plan of. Here's how we're going to grow the show, and we had goals as numbers of where we wanted to be. We missed all of them, by the way. We totally missed all of them. But I felt like just going through that process helped us have a different show with Stacking Benjamins and have a growth engine that then we could tweak the growth engine from time to time as it didn't work, you know, because the process of it not working helped us figure out how to make it work.
And this is why he has an award.
And I do not.
I guess that's true.
This is why he has an Academy of Podcasting Award for Stacking
so
Benjamins, and we do not.
So if I step back a minute. So, yes, to say I didn't have any plan, I was maybe exaggerating a little bit, but I didn't formalize it the way you did. You know, I'm always going to conferences like this, going to FinCon. You're always learning new things and new strategies. So you know, the long-term goal is to ultimately move back to my own site with, you know, products and courses, things like that. And I do have those in the pipeline. I do have ideas listed out that are in the works. But you know, I can always add new things, and I can always take things out, and yeah. I can always shift based sure. on what I'm learning. I listen to awesome podcasts by, you know, other great people here at this conference, and maybe, you know, Pat Flynn or John Lee Dumas or whoever it is tells me something. I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. I can add that into what I'm doing. And, you know, unlike the day job world where I have to go through a boss or a boss's boss and all the bureaucracy around it, I can change things on the fly. And that's part of the fun of side hustling, especially as a solo side yeah. hustler. You can build your plan as you go. So always have your eye at the end of the tunnel, but your road there can be windy.
And based on your question back to me, Nick, I think what you're saying is don't get stuck in the details. Go do it. Yeah. Go do something.
You're right. I see so many people kind of using it as a procrastination tool, using right. it as, well, I got to get this done before I can go do this. Like, you don't really. Or even just if it's like a thing on a post-it note, hey, my plan is to be a freelance writer. Okay, go get a customer. And then you're a freelance writer, and it's on to the next step in the plan.
Yeah. No, that's interesting, because the thing that we screwed up, we didn't launch for a year after we had the idea. And if I had anything to take back, I'd get back that year, because holy cow. I mean, at that time, as you know, it seems like now there's a million new podcasts a day.
Right.
And even when we started, we thought it was crowded. But when we started, it wasn't nearly as crowded as now.
Yeah.
And if you're going to start a podcast, start it now versus 5 years from now. If I would have started a year earlier, would it have been even, you know what I mean?
Oh,
even
yeah,
a much,
sure.
much less crowded field. So
there's a great Chinese proverb that says the best time to have planted a tree is 100 years ago. Barring that, today will do. Yeah. So
right.
you know, if you didn't take the action yet, you know, it's still today. Go do it.
That's a really common theme on the Side Hustle show and other podcasts too. It's like a year from now, you'll have wished you started today. So, you know, the sooner you can start that clock. And things going to change, but, you know, once you're in motion, some good things can happen.
When with a side hustle, though, when you talk about things change, when do you know the path isn't going the way you want? Like, do you see people give up too early?
Well, you always see the picture of, like, the two, you know, coal miner or diamond miners, you know, in the tunnel. And the one guy is, like, giving up right before he, you know, hits the thing. You never know when it's going to go. Like, the criteria that I use is when it sucks. Like, when you dread doing the work. Like, you know, maybe some people would call that the dip. But the last thing you need is a second job that you hate. Yeah. And so if it's not lighting you up, it's not giving you energy, if it's not, you know, something that you legitimately look forward to doing, like, why do it? Like, find another thing.
Yeah.
So you said find another thing. What are some of the most interesting
side
hustles?
I want to talk about the professional cuddler.
Right? For reals.
Because I think professional cuddling is something that I qualify for.
I know. I've heard about that a lot, too. And I've been thinking about, like, what are some interesting things I can do to meet interesting new people? And this cuddling thing, especially as somebody who's divorced and you know, my human contact is totally like, I'm going to go get a manicure this month. Please massage my hands. And can you do it for extra time?
I thought you were going to say, when you said manicure, I said, I'm going to go get a man.
A cure.
Well,
it's
funny,
the cuddlers, there's none of that hanky panky involved with professional cuddling. It's a very, very, anyway. But tell us about some of those cool side hustles, Nick.
Nick's like, I don't want to be involved in this conversation.
I'm like so curious about how this works. There was a video, it went, you know, medium viral on Facebook, or at least in like the side hustle circles that I run in, about this.
It's a woman, she's in Portland. I know the story. I used to be a Portlander, so it made local news. Yeah, so the thing I wonder about it is, you know, I thought maybe Portland could handle it because, you know, they keep it weird. Maybe it'd work in Austin, too. All the cities that have Keep Our City Weird stickers. Yeah. It's interesting to hear it going to other markets. It seems very niche.
There's supposedly a whole marketplace for one site is called cuddleup.com, and then I think there's another one, too. It's just
like the Uber for cuddles?
Yeah, that's what it is. And you can set, like, an hourly rate, you know?
Your cuddler will be here in 7 minutes.
And I'd be like, there's some that are, like, free, and you're like, I don't...
You probably don't cuddle that well. Like, it's the same thing with, like, any service. You know, you charge just a little bit for your freelance service, people will think it's low value.
Yeah.
So you got to charge, like, at least $100 an hour for your cuddles.
Premium cuddles.
Premium. Yeah. What are some of the weird ones?
Yeah, tell us some of the weird ones.
That one's probably at the top of the charts. Come back to me. I'll think of something.
So my weirdest one that I still have today, I started a flash mob company in 2010. And flash mobs were all the craze. I kept seeing all the YouTube videos in, like, New York and Antwerp. Yeah, it was like a thing for a little while. So I went on a flash mob. I saw it in the Westward, a local Denver paper. It was going to be a dance party on the light rail train. I was like, oh, I'm going to go do that. And the next day, I actually met the guy who had planned it. And his name, it's a long story. His name, he told me, was Rick Gold, a Jewish lawyer new to the community. I was at a Jewish happy hour, so it's not like I was out looking for Jewish people. I was at a Jewish event, being Jewish myself. But that part is irrelevant to the story. So I met him. We decided to start a flash mob company together. So we did one just for fun, and then we started doing sponsored flash mobs and then getting hired to do them for wedding proposals, things like that. The crazy thing that happened was we had a huge, just for free, a publicity event for us, mob scheduled, flash mob for marriage equality right in front of the big baseball field in Denver. And the week before that was scheduled, I found out he was a con artist. His name wasn't really Rick Gold.
Oh.
It was Rick Strandloff. And he actually got a Supreme Court case for the Stolen Valor Act.
Wow.
He had done this before, and he was trying to con the Jewish community to get onto nonprofit boards to steal money. So I started a side hustle business with this guy.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was on the news. I almost was on Anderson Cooper. I was all the local news. And I just had a real tough decision. I thought, do I end this business right now? It was kind of traumatic to go through this. And I said, you know what? No, there's all these people signed up. I'm going to have a flash mob this weekend. Over 200 people came. And it was this awesome publicity thing for Denver Flash Mob, which I kept running with on my own, and I've made thousands of dollars over the years. At the peak, I was making about $5,000 a year planning flash mobs.
Huh. Well, so there it is, Nick. You don't have this on Side Hustle Nation. Find somebody who's a scammer, get on national news, and that's like advertising for your company.
There you go. No publicity is bad publicity, right?
The guy who worked with the con artist.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I have to take a quick break from our awesome discussion that Miranda and I are having with Eric and Nick to say a big thanks to everybody who's gone to check out the Buzz Index. If you've ever wondered if there's a way to capitalize on all the chatter of investors on social media, well, guess what? The Buzz Index is the way to do it. It trades under ticker symbol BUZZ, and it's the same artificial intelligence technique that some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use. And you now, if you use BUZZ, can make their edge, your edge. What the Buzz Index does is it gives investors a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. They don't use surveys, they don't guess. Instead, they just listen like a fly on the wall for the most mentioned large cap US stocks across the social media landscape. They then assign that chatter a score based on how positive it is, and the most mentioned stocks that have the highest, most bullish score, those then go into the index. So invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for a link to the Buzz Index and more information. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. Two things. Even if you're not sure if you want to invest in the Buzz Index, I really love the Buzz Index newsletter that just comes out whenever there is buzz. So you can see and feel exactly how the Buzz Index works ahead of time. You can sign up for it at that link. And also, I have to disclose that I use the Buzz Index. Doesn't make it right for you, but it's in my portfolio. So do your homework and check it out. All right, back to the floor of Podcast Movement in Anaheim, California.
Let's transition, if you don't mind, because we only have a few minutes left.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, we talk about side hustles, and that really is investing in a new career, investing in new opportunities. We're here at Podcast Movement, where we all have podcasts, so we're investing in ourselves here. Whether you work a 9-to-5 or you're an entrepreneur, where do coming to conferences, how does that fit into what you do with your life, about how you make money? Why are you here, Eric?
So I can say without any doubt that conferences have completely changed my life, and I would not be here today. Well, obviously it's a conference, but I wouldn't be here in my career where I am today, living this like dream lifestyle. I live by the beach. I work at home. I'm with my family. And it all started because in 2006, I had this crazy idea to start a personal finance blog. And then some of my crazy internet friends, led by this guy named Philip Taylor, said, let's all get together in Chicago and talk about blogs. And the first FinCon, it wasn't even called FinCon yet, was where I learned how to look at my blog not as a hobby, but as a business. And I met and connected with all of these people who were doing similar to what I was doing and seeing all this great success. So not only was it inspirational, but the community is incredible at FinCon. You know, it's not an I win, you lose situation. It's a we all win together. And the support has been so fantastic, and I've learned so much. And that is where I found my first clients. So they were people from the FinCon community and then companies from the FinCon community. And that's what led me to and eventually leave my job and make this my new job.
So for you, Nick, is it motivation or skills?
A little bit of both. So it's kind of become a family reunion of sorts, like coming to these events and getting to hang out with all my, you know, internet friends, as my wife says. But, you know, I'm here to learn, too, and try and figure out how to, you know, break through the next plateau and how to, you know, sound better on air and really learn from some of the best in the business, where probably one of the biggest mistakes I've made as an entrepreneur, even after quitting my job, was like being in my cave and, you know, being very heads down in my work, but not, you know, not being a part of that community for networking and accountability and even just bouncing ideas off of each other. You mean you're in one session and they say something and you meet somebody in the hall and they say another and that sparks another idea. Like it's really powerful and something I don't usually get sitting at home behind my computer screen.
But it's funny, Miranda, my brother says, you know, because I tell him he's got to start going to conferences, and he says all the things that Nick just said. He said, well, I can talk to people online, I can talk to people through my computer, I can email them back and forth, and I can watch YouTube videos that show me how to do the skills that I need. So why fly all the way here to Anaheim versus that?
So there's something about meeting a person face-to-face and looking into their eyes.
Oh, boy.
And sometimes you get scammed like Eric.
You never know.
But by and large, you meet people and you really kind of click. And, you know, they have recently done these interesting studies about how just being in physical proximity to people actually sparks that creative flow and getting that going. And that's one of the things we were reading recently, because I work for a remote company and we have twice a year we meet together in a retreat to get in a room together. And yeah, we can talk to each other all day on Slack and we're collaborating. But the best ideas and the best flow we get actually comes when we're sitting in a room together and interacting more naturally, because we don't have that screen between us. And, you know, and my business partner, like, we decided we would start our business together after we met at FinCon in person. And we'd already known each other for a couple years online, and we'd been in a Skype group together, and we chatted almost every day. But until we actually met in person and really saw how we meshed, like, it never occurred to us that we should start a business together. And now we're business partners.
And you also get the accessibility of people that,
yeah.
You know, there's people here who I've been able to talk to in person who are, you know, six-figure a month podcasters and bloggers who, you know, they get, you know, like many of us do because we're in the conference world. You know, we get hundreds of emails a day. These guys probably get 10 times that. So I might not make it through the filter to show up on their radar. But when you walk up and say, you know, hi, I'm a big fan, shake your hand. Yeah, you have access to people that you might not otherwise show up on the radar, and that leads to awesome opportunities and collaborations, and you never know.
But to your point earlier, Nick, there's something to be said when you said, you know, you're being down your cave. There's also, I think, something to be said about just being unplugged and being away from the business, because for me, like, being out of the basement forces me, now I'm not thinking about what I'm doing today, I'm forced to think high level about my business instead.
Yeah. Which is good to get into that mode every now and again. And yeah, it's like, yeah, you can sit and you can watch courses on your computer. You can even like block off days on your calendar for like growth days and stuff. But it's so easy to say, well, I have all this other stuff to do, right? But when it's like, well, yeah, I'm physically away from the office, I'm here for the specific purpose to hang out and meet people and learn. Like, it's the computer is locked away on the in the hotel room, and it's not, you know, you're not thinking about it.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up, guys. Thanks for being with us. Let's talk about what's going on at all of your main places.
That's right.
Nick, Side Hustle Nation, what's going on there?
Come on over to SideHustleNation.com and check out the Side Hustle Show podcast for new part-time business ideas every week.
And what about you, Eric? What's going on over at Personal Profitability?
At Personal Profitability, I recently released a 7-day free boot camp called the Personal Profitability Boot Camp. Head to personalprofitability.com/bootcamp, and you get an email every day for a week with a video. It's about 10 minutes long, helping you get on track to optimize your finances to start that next side hustle.
Awesome. Boom. Thanks for hanging out with us. Miranda, what's going on at Planting Money Seeds or Adulting?
We're going to go with adulting today. We are actually starting a new series of just really short live streams. So every now and again, we get questions that people want answered. And lately, I actually just got a question from a listener who wants to know about opening an IRA for his child. So we're going to go ahead and check out. Actually, you'd want to go to our Facebook group, and that's just look for the hashtag adulting Facebook group and check it out. And you should be able to access the upcoming live stream about what to do to open an IRA for your child.
Awesome. And it.
I was just going to ask, what is happening over at the award-winning stacking? Joe just won Stacking Benjamins, the whole team, not just Joe, his whole team,
yes,
won an award here at Podcast Movement, the Academy of Podcasting Awards. He won Best Business Podcast. So what is happening over
which
there?
Which we had no business winning.
That is so not
we
true.
We try to teach you nothing.
I'm having a fanboy moment just sitting here with you, right? Joe.
So tell us, what is happening over there at the award-winning?
Yes, you guys are so lucky
Stacking
you get to spend
Benjamins.
Time with me. Right. No, we started up a collaboration with themuse.com, one of the biggest career sites online, and Catherine Minshew from The Muse, their CEO. She is now going to be with us on most of our Fridays talking about careers. And so one of her first segments that just aired is on networking, the wrong ways to network, like all the bad things people do and how to fix that so that nice. It comes off as much better, non-creepy, a lot of fun networking that actually works. So that's us.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today. Remember to head on over to moneytreepodcast.com. You're always welcome to ask us questions. We'll have a listener question episode coming up soon. Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, also on Stitcher, and coming soon to Google Play. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do, so invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.
Now get out of the basement and get back to work.
Get back to the basement and get back to work.